3%. In 1990, the average days that a worker missed work because of their injury in a disabling claim was 98 days. That's been reduced to 61 days by the year 2002, and that's the last year that we have statistics available. We should have new statistics here within a couple of weeks. They just aren't quite ready yet. So there's been quite a bit of improvement in terms of outcomes in the Oregon workers' compensation system. If I may, I'll turn to the Workers' Compensation Management Labor Advisory Committee next. Oregon has experienced a lot of success recently, but workers' compensation, I think, can best be described as it's always a work in progress. There are always issues. There are always things that need to be worked on, things that need to be improved. The legislature created the Management Labor Advisory Committee during the special session of 1990 to advise the legislature and the governor on workers' compensation policy issues and to provide a forum for addressing technical and usually contentious workers' compensation issues in a public manner. The Management Labor Advisory Committee, or MLAC for short, is made up of governor-appointed and Senate-confirmed representatives of both management and labor. The Management Labor Advisory Committee reviews workers' compensation policy issues, legislative concepts, and provides a forum for building consensus with stakeholders and customers of the system prior to making recommendations. MLAC reviews the policy concepts, issues, ideas that come forward through public hearings, public testimony, and then they make recommendations to you, the legislature, about what to do during each session in regard to certain bills. These are just recommendations that are brought forward by MLAC. Attached to this testimony, you'll find a summary of the mission of MLAC, as well as a summary of recent legislative concepts that MLAC has endorsed or that they actually developed that the legislature has passed. You'll also find a summary of three major policy issues that they've been working on during this interim that will be coming forward this session. And these three areas are return to work programs, return to work programs to address how well workers are helped in getting back to work, permanent total disability in order to determine and address the current statutory thresholds for what wage workers can earn. There's been a real concern that those thresholds are too severe, and whether or not the reconsideration process in regards to whether or not a person continues to be permanent and total disability, that process ought to be amended. They're also looking at insurer medical examinations, or IMEs for short, in order to ensure that these examinations are fair and non-biased. The Management Labor Advisory Committee has made recommendations on the first two areas, return to work and permanent total disability. They're currently working on the IME piece, and we expect specific recommendations to come out very shortly on that. The Department of Consumer and Business Services also has a short legislative agenda about workers' compensation this session. There is Senate Bill 119, which refers to return-to-work programs, and frankly, this bill is probably going to become the MLAC vehicle for their return-to-work agenda. There's two pieces in there that relate to the statute. One that actually just puts in statute language to codify current practice, which is allowing provision of benefits directly to preferred workers versus just allowing benefits to go just to the employers of preferred workers. An example of that would be a worker who has worked in a warehouse or in the garage or something. They do not own office attire, purchasing office attire for a worker so they can take a permanent modified job in an office with their employer so that they've got nice clothing to wear. That's just an example. The Preferred Worker Program is a statutorily mandated program that the legislature created to provide incentives to employers and to assist workers who are permanently disabled to return to physically appropriate employment. While this bill doesn't change the current practice, it does codify a current practice upon the recommendation and advice of the Department of Justice into the statute. The second piece of this bill eliminates what's known as the stay of vocational assistance benefits. Current law basically states that if a worker is found eligible for vocational assistance services by the department, they may be found ineligible for vocational assistance services by the insurer. The worker has a right to contest that first to the department in an administrative dispute resolution. If the department finds them eligible, current law states that the insurer must provide plan development or return to work plan development to the worker and vocational evaluation services, but all other services are stayed until that dispute is finally resolved. What this bill would do is allow the worker to continue to receive all of their benefits even while the claim is in litigation. However, the bill provides for some indemnification to the insurer in case the insurer prevails in their appeal. Any expenditure that they have made would be reimbursed to them out of the worker benefit fund. The other two bills, there's HB 2091, which relates to administrative orders of the Workers' Compensation Division and the Department of Consumer and Business Services. It transfers review of workers' compensation-related administrative orders from the Office of Administrative Hearing to the Workers' Compensation Board. Current law requires that some appeals of workers' compensation matters go to the Office of Administrative Hearings, while some other appeals go to the board. It's actually a fairly confusing, bifurcated hearing system. We're recommending we go back to where we were just a couple of years ago with all appeals going to the board. The chief hearings officer at the Office of Administrative Hearings does not oppose this bill. It is just a regulatory streamlining approach. It will also save a little bit of money as well for the system. Finally, there's SB 172, which I refer to as our technical cleanup bill. This bill corrects three things in current law. One, it gives the department the authority to issue civil penalties for violation of law or statute. Currently, we have the ability to issue civil penalties for violation of administrative rules, but not directly for violation of statute. So what we end up doing is loading up our administrative rules with the language of the statute. All this would do would allow us to issue civil penalties for violation of statute, and it should streamline our rules quite a bit to be able to do this. Second thing this bill does, it changes one word in ORS 656268 from later to earlier. And what it does is it eliminates delays in some administrative reconsideration orders regarding permanent partial disability awards. Finally, it eliminates what we consider an obsolete pre-employment provision, which requires employers to ask the director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services to select a physician for them to conduct a pre-employment physical. This is in ORS 656806. As far as we know, no employer has ever requested this. We have no record of ever having any action taken under this law, and this would just eliminate that requirement. In conclusion, the workers' compensation system's gone through tremendous transformation over the last 15 years. Frankly, we're looked at as a model by many other states. We've been successful in lowering premium costs while increasing benefits to workers. I think that's a tremendous success. J.L. Wilson and Brad Witt from the Management Labor Advisory Committee will be here to speak to their legislative agenda. This session should see continued work on workers' compensation issues. I expect you'll have several bills in front of you in addition to the ones that I just talked about, the ones that I know of. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that I can on anything I talked about.
Thank you, John. Representative Schaffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you provide us with the exact language of these surveys of these physicians and if they're and the results by question? And if they're more than yes or no, could you give us some examples of the positive and negative answers to these questions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, yes, I can do that. I'm not prepared to do that today, right, but I can provide the committee with a copy of our report, which does include specific answers. Now, it does not specify which physician has provided which answer. That's not in the report, but the specifics are there.
Follow up.
Yeah, I want the questions as they were asked and the results, whether they be, and if they're more than yes or no, I want not all the essay answers, but just some a sampling of them, positive or negative or whatever. Please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, may I ask a clarifying question, please?
Sure.
Are you primarily interested in just the questions to IME physicians or all physicians? That because we asked attending physicians as well as the examining physicians.
How much work is it to do both? Because I don't know.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, it wouldn't be that much more work to provide both. Okay.
Any other question? Representative Holo.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering about your statistics of that you mentioned where total claims incidents had dropped by 45% and fewer workers are suffering from work-related injuries. Are those statistics including workers that aren't covered by workman's comp?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, no. Those are only. This is only in regard to workers who are filing workers' compensation claims. Let me amend that answer. That yes, that would also include workers who we have found should have been covered by workers' compensation, but their employer did not purchase that insurance, so they'd be what we call non-compliant employer claims would also be in there. But it's just workers who file workers' compensation claims. Am I answering your question, sir?
That does help quite a bit. I was just trying to get at do your statistics also show in looking at these numbers whether the number of independent contractors or 1099 employees who aren't covered by workman's comp I don't believe are included in these. Has there been a growth in that kind of worker as opposed to the traditional employee-employer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, this is something that we do track rather carefully. In fact, it's one of the areas that is considered a key measure of our performance, tracking how many non-complying employer claims there are out there. In other words, how often are we running into the situation where a worker is subject to the workers' compensation law, but there wasn't any coverage provided by the employer? There, actually, over the last several years, that has held very steady. It does vary from quarter to quarter. There's a few more or a few less each quarter, but it's held pretty steady. So we haven't seen a growth in the non-compliant employer area. But I think you were asking probably a broader question, too, and that was whether or not we're seeing a growth in workers who are getting hurt on the job but would be considered non-subject workers as well. My answer to that would be no. In fact, we've just seen a fairly large increase in the population of workers coming who would come into the system as subject workers, being the home health care workers who came in under the IEU or SEIU contract 2 years ago. That brought in, I think it was somewhere between 10,000 and 12,000 workers now who are now subject to workers' compensation law who weren't before. So actually we're seeing a lot more workers who are covered under workers' compensation, and in addition to the growth in employment here in Oregon as well. So there's quite a bit more workers working who would be eligible to file workers' compensation claims if they were hurt than where we were sitting 10 or 15 years ago. Does that answer your question, Representative?
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you very much, John, for coming this morning. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Could we have J.L. Wilson and Brad Witt? And there was one other person.
Maybe she should come later. I'll see if she's going to make
okay.
sure that's right.
All right. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, I'm J.L. Wilson, representing the Management Labor Advisory Committee. I'm co-chair of that committee, representing the business side. With me is Brad Witt from the labor side. My being co-chair on the MLAC side, I represent the National Federation of Independent Business. I have 12,000 dues-paying businesses here in the state of Oregon who belong to my organization, primarily small, and that's who I represent as a member of MLAC. Now, I kind of want to demystify the committee for you today. Undoubtedly, when you consider workers' comp legislation throughout the session, the question will pop up time and time again, well, what does MLAC have to say about the issue? And I want to lay the groundwork for MLAC, kind of demystify it for you and allow you to make your judgment from there. The Management Labor Advisory Committee is commissioned by statute. It was a product of the 1990 workers' comp reforms. It was a recognition that at the time that workers' comp was considered the Bosnia of Oregon politics, it wasn't pretty, and this committee was commissioned to study workers' comp on a year-round basis and to kind of engage in those workers' comp fights so you don't have to, I guess is the best way of saying it. And we can still be friends while doing it. Brad and I are friends, and we engage in those things all the time. Now, with regard to, I view our committee as kind of not just a safeguard of the reforms, but I view our committee as being a safeguarder of the system. I think it's been a linchpin in the success of our system. That is, we're not prone to making radical changes. I know from my point of view, I want to keep workers' comp down some well-defined parameters so we're not doing things that are to the detriment of injured workers. We're not doing things that wildly increase cost to the system. Just keep the system kind of down a straight and narrow, because I view our system as a success now, and I have a vested interest in keeping it that way. At least that's my perspective. And so you see that we will engage in certain discussions over this interim. We've engaged in discussions of permanent total disability awards at the request of labor. We've engaged in the discussion of vocational rehab so people are better equipped to change professions or get back to work in the event that they are injured on the job. We've come to agreement on those two, what I would consider bigger ticket items. We're also in discussion with regard to IMEs. That's something we haven't come to agreement on yet, but that's an example of the things are the long-term projects that we engage in. Those are the things that bubble to the top. We tackle those over a two-year process and come to you with suggestions. Our strongest relationship has typically been with the governor and the governor's office, as we have usually had the arrangement that he will support what the committee supports. So that is an overview of what we do. I think we'll meet every 2 weeks during this session to consider the onslaught of workers' comp bills. So you know that there's five management members, five labor members. It takes a majority of both sides to come up with a positive recommendation from MLAC, whether we support a bill or not. And we're here to recommend passage to you on those things. You're always free to call us, but we'll usually be in your ear about what it is we're doing and what it is that we support and think is good for the progress of the system.
Thank you, Gail. Any questions? Brad?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Brad Witt. I am Secretary Treasurer of the Oregon AFL-CIO, and as JL told you, one of the MLAC committee members. I am also co-chair of the MLAC subcommittee on IMEs. What I wanted to discuss with you briefly this morning were some of the legislative concepts that we have in mind for helping to improve the system. JL just briefly reviewed the purpose of the vocational concepts that we are going to be moving forward. He also mentioned that we will be addressing a permanent total disability. Some of you may remember that here of recent years, there was actually a negative one total number of permanent total disability wards in the state, which is to suggest that rescissions were greater than the number of folks that had filed claims. That reverberated publicly. People asked why. And so MLAC responded and took a look at some of the issues that surround permanent and total disability awards. And specifically, when is it and when is it not appropriate to rescind those kinds of awards? The committee has made the following recommendations with regard to these kinds of rescissions: that someone who has been awarded permanent and total disability not have their benefits taken away and unless and until they have had the benefit at least of one level of appeal so that their case can be heard before the state, that the worker's condition must show material improvement either vocationally or their medical capacities prior to the reexamination of their case, and that reexamination also include an in-person review of the injured worker, should that injured worker so desire. A rescinded award automatically will qualify an injured worker for vocational assistance for the very reasons that JL just told you, so that they can move on to new careers. Those folks who have had awards for greater than 10 years, their rescission must be approved by administrative law judge at the Workers' Compensation Board, again, as a further oversight mechanism. And then we have recommended defining gainful employment as the federal poverty threshold by family members, families of one, two, three, or four family members, and the incomes that that are respective to those number of family members. Before I move on, Mr. Chairman, to IMEs, if there are any questions about permanent total disability and our recommendations, I'd be happy to try and answer those.
Okay. Any questions? I don't see any, Brad.
Okay.
Excuse me just a minute. And that's legislation that's coming. There's some bills pending.
Yes, yes. And with the IMEs, Mr. Chairman, it has only been through the subcommittee process. The full committee of MLAC has not yet had an opportunity to debate those recommendations. But I fully expect that there will be legislation forthcoming. I can share with you the recommendations, the topic areas that we will be advancing to the full committee. The first one is a certification in the state for physicians that that conduct IMEs, largely based on education. Another topic area is the subject of education, and we think that education for all parties involved could be tremendously helpful in preventing misunderstandings. As I say, the certification process refers to a doctor's. I think it'd be very helpful to have an education process for the injured worker so that they know what to expect. The subcommittee has even recommended making videotapes available to the injured workers to help diminish any kind of concern about the unknown. What is an IME actually like? What am I anticipating having to go through? Also, we are recommending an education process, a counseling period, with the attending physician after the IME report comes down so that the injured worker can hear from his or her doctor just what that report means and then obtain a copy of that report. Any witnesses that are involved in the process should also have an education process, we believe, so that they know that they are a passive and unobtrusive witness in the process. And lastly, that claims examiners have additional education, particularly over those areas of what is and is not appropriate levels of contact during the IME process. In terms of preparing for the examination, our subcommittee has recommended that workers receive additional information about the opportunity to have any expenses, particularly travel-related, mileage, perhaps hotels, that those expenses can be reimbursed prospectively in advance of their examination so that it's not an undue burden to the worker. And that that diagnostics, x-rays, films, those kinds of things that would assist the IME physician be made available in advance of the examination, several days in advance, so that those can be reviewed for their applicability to the case at hand. We'll be recommending the implementation of a formal complaint process, that there be an exit evaluation completed by the injured worker if he or she so chooses. What was their experience in going through that? Were they satisfied with the experience? Those kinds of things. Any complaints that an injured worker might have would be processed through the workers' compensation division. And legitimate claims after investigation by WCD then would be considered during the recertification process. And then lastly, our subcommittee heard a good deal of testimony about the burden that IME physicians are placed under when injured workers are scheduled for an IME and simply don't show up. No advance notice, no reason given for their not showing up.
Excuse me,
and,
Brad.
Yes.
On IMEs, is this the same situation that we approached in general government and the Senate on the interim? Is that the same? Okay, he's over here nodding yes. I think you have some bills coming out of that committee that addresses this. What we found, and correct me if I'm wrong, that some workers, from, let's say, Southern Oregon, we're having to go clear to Portland to get a medical exam?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, we have heard a great deal of testimony to that effect. And I would say that, in all fairness, that there are instances where I think if you take a neutral look at that, there may be some good reasons why that occurs. There may be some instances where there are fewer good reasons why that occurs. And I think that perhaps the best way to address that, I'm speaking for myself at this point, because our subcommittee has not finished its work in that arena. That is the one remaining key topic area that we have to complete. But I think if we add language to the current law that says a time and place that is convenient to the injured workers, with some caveats that the physician that is doing the IME have expertise within that area of medical concern, that may address those very issues that you heard in the interim committee. Again, I think we have to consider that if there is a neurological disorder or pick whatever that issue is, and there is no physician in the immediate area that is considered an expert or competent in those areas, it may in fact warrant travel that is a greater distance than one would normally expect. But we do have some language in mind that we think would make all parties hopefully happy with that consideration. And so, lastly, did I answer your question, Representative?
Well, all you have to do is say yes or no.
And yes.
And it's yes.
The short answer is yes. But I do think that oftentimes there are so many complications in workers' compensation that a simple yes or no perhaps is inadequate, and this may be one of those instances. There are some other considerations, I think. And lastly, Mr. Chairman, we will be recommending to the full committee some penalties for those workers who injured workers who fail to show up for examinations with no advance notice and without cause. With that, I would be happy to try and answer any questions that you might have on IMEs or our recommendations.
Thank you. Any questions? I just see a lot of blank looks, so I guess not. Thank you. Both
Thank
of you,
you
very much for coming this morning.
Very much.
Could we have Maureen Bach, please? Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Maureen Bach. I'm the chair of the Workers' Compensation Board. I'm here today to just give you an overview about what we do as the third entity that's involved in workers' compensation. As you know, the division has been here, and they've given you an overview of their regulatory and administrative processes, and the Management Labor Advisory Committee representatives have given you an overview of what they do in the system, and I'm here to just tell you that we're the group that tries very hard not to appear anywhere in the system except as the litigation forum. What I'm saying by that is we typically do not take an active position on legislation that's proposed. We work with the division on what the fiscal impact will be to our agency, because we are an agency of about 95 individuals, so we have a fairly large budget. We are another funded agency that's a share funding source with the Workers' Compensation Division. But we have a hearings division, a board review division, and an administrative services division. So when there is a dispute in the system, and there are about 9,300 requests for hearing filed every year, those come into our administrative services division. They're set for hearings within 90 days after receipt at various locations throughout the state, and our 30-some ALJs then conduct hearings on those that actually go to hearing. Either party can appeal an order from the hearings division to board review. The board members sit in panels to resolve those disputes on appeal. We do that de novo, which means we look at the entire record if we were hearing it for the first time, and then we issue written opinions and orders at the board level as well. Those can then go to the Court of Appeals. So because we are a quasi-judicial entity and not a policy-making entity, we stay in the background. We resolve disputes after you all vote on legislation and put it into the law. Then when those provisions are the subject of dispute, we resolve those disputes. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mr. Chair, I'm curious. I've just heard a lot of complaints over the years from injured workers about the process of making claims and collecting workman's comp and getting decisions made when a worker has obviously had an injury due to his work, but worked for many different companies, or perhaps the companies have changed their names or legal entities, and they end up having to be at the whim of every different insurance company to go to several different examinations throughout time, and then categorically their claims are usually denied and they have to get attorneys and go through 2 and 3 years worth of process. Meanwhile, which may not be totally legal, but people with that have treated them for their injuries or sending them bills which they can't pay and put them in a financial crisis of sort, or at least a perceived crisis, if nothing else, with creditors calling them constantly. Do you see any resolution to this dispute when the worker's obviously been injured, but the lawyers and insurance companies want to battle over who's going to pay and what it's actually going to end up harming the worker for several years? And that's been a real disturbing part of workman's comp for me, and just listening to workers who have been through this. And it's not just an isolated case. It seems like it happens more than not.
Mr. Chair, Representative Holvey, those are what we would call responsibility cases, where the issue is really who's responsible for payment of the ultimate decision on whether or not it's compensable, if it is found to be compensable. And those cases do take a long time to go through the hearings process and through the board process, because you're sorting out competing interests. Sometimes we do have employers or insurers who will admit that it is compensable and the argument is over. When was the person injured? When was their additional injury, particularly in an occupational disease case, and that kind of thing. So those are matters that I'm not really sure that I'm the person that can address those, because we just interpret what everyone has enacted and put before us. If you would like numbers on the number of cases that we hear in that area, I can provide that information to you. But that's really a policy decision that we have that has been made in Oregon about who pays and how it relates back to them through the employment chain. Would you like information about the numbers?
No, I was looking for more ideas, like to solve that problem, so that, to follow up, Mr. Chair, excuse me. It just seems like the worker ends up being the one that's left out there in the lurch, so to speak, while the system obviously is going to pay someday, but it puts the worker through an incredible series of and years of constant examinations from doctors, from every different insurance company that's involved. And if you've got five or six insurance companies involved in it, it seems like there ought to be a swifter way to help the worker and let the insurance companies battle that out later. I just was curious if there was any talk about helping that system along, that's all.
Representative Schaffler.
I would take you up on your offer for the numbers, please.
If you'd get them to Janet, and then they can be provided to all the committee, please.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schaffler, I will get those numbers to you.
Is there any other questions? Thank you very much, Maureen, for being here this morning. Let's see. Didn't mention at the start of our meeting this morning that Representative Kitts is an excused absence, for the record. We'll open a work session for the possible introduction of some committee bills. I have LC Draft 1533 and LC Draft 1534. And committee, adopting these as committee bills in no way commits you to support or oppose these bills. It's simply a way of getting them introduced into the process. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, I would like to, Mr. Chair, I'd like to make a motion that we introduce bill, LC 1533 and 1534 as committee bills and forward it on.
Representative Esquivel moves that we adopt LC 1533 and 1534 as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Is there any objection? Seeing none, they will adopt them as committee bills. Let's see, I come back out of work session now? No. You have anything else?
No, Mr. Chair, just to point out that 1533 will be at the request of the Funeral Directors Association, and LP 1534 will be at the request of the Recreational Vehicle Industries Association.
Thank you, Janet. Anyone on the committee have anything else? If not, we are adjourned.
Oh, I love the way you handle it.